ॐ गणतमनन्दस्य जनार्जनसुलकया चक्षुसुमिलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः श्रीचैतन्यमनुभीष्टं स्तपितं येन भूतले सायं प्रकदमायं दधति सपदन्तिकम् पञ्चकपटुभ्यश्च कृपसिन्धुवैभ्य च पतितनं पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः. We heard, or we've been hearing for the past several chapters, Kapila Muni's answer to Devahuti's question about for him to describe time and for him to describe fruitive activities. So we heard that action of time, how it is the energy of the Lord and it moves forward the material creation. And then we heard first about adverse fruitive activities. Adverse fruitive activities means activities, selfish activities against the scriptural injunctions, wherein one takes to family life or one takes to earning his livelihood in a way, especially the livelihood in a black or dishonest way, anything to maintain the family. So we heard the results of that, and the results of that were terrifying. In one's life, one suffers, and then after one, when the soul leaves the body, the further suffering really commences in a very deep and terrible, awful fashion. Then finally, so in life one suffers when one commits sinful activities, and at the end of life there is suffering, great, great suffering. And then one is forced to take one of many animal births. And then for thousands of years, thousands of births, one cycles through different animal bodies where one's consciousness is so restricted and one's pain is so great, and the only way practically one can survive is the dullness of consciousness. One's consciousness is so compressed, like an anesthetic. What is when one is having an operation, or one's having a teeth extracted? They'll give you some injection, so you can't feel anything. So is that wonderful? Is that wonderful? Is that the exalted consciousness that everyone's longing for? The inability to feel pain? Along with that inability to feel pain is the inability to experience anything, practically speaking. So this is such an extreme condition. Having an animal body is such an extreme condition for the soul, because otherwise, just like if one is having open heart surgery without an anesthetic, he cannot live. No one can live with his heart cut open and this and that, triple bypass. You need an anesthetic, otherwise you can't survive, to dull the pain, to make sure you don't feel the pain. Otherwise no one will survive. So similarly, in an animal birth, one's consciousness is compressed to such a degree, just so that the soul who has to live in that confinement can survive. The suffering is so great. So then after so many animal births, and after having gone to the hell known as Andhatamisra, the impious, the soul who has performed so many impious activities, he can take his birth in a human body, and before he does so, he passes through the embryo stage. And very rarely, occasionally, a soul may have consciousness by Krishna's grace of what he has just passed through. He has consciousness of the suffering that he's just undergone, a very rare soul. And the benefit of remembering the suffering is that makes one far less inclined to perform the activities that cause the suffering. So that soul is fearful. that, what is he fearful of? That he's going to take his birth again and then become enamored by the material energy again and then perform sinful activities again and then have to go through this horrendous cycle of suffering again, only for it to happen again and only for it to happen again. So he's terrified of that, and in that consciousness, even though he's in the womb, which is described as so difficult for the soul, even though he's in the womb suffering, he prefers to be in that consciousness, in a suffering, conditioned consciousness, where at least he remembers Krishna. Because if one is Krishna consciousness, in Krishna consciousness, Krishna consciousness basically means putting oneself, gotupte varanam tata, putting oneself under the protection of Krishna and accepting all that happens to him as Krishna's mercy. So a soul in Krishna consciousness, so this soul in Krishna consciousness, when he's suffering, and this is really the key to surviving suffering, either by, there's two ways. One is by dulling one's consciousness, and the other way is by invigorating one's consciousness. If one invigorates one's consciousness, stretches one's consciousness to the limit of consciousness, he stretches it to take shelter of Krishna. So in that way, one can actually transcend all suffering, not through the mode of ignorance, but like by dulling the consciousness, so one doesn't experience anything, but one experiences actually the ecstasy of Krishna consciousness. And this is possible, to be in the highest ecstasy and the greatest of suffering. If one fully takes shelter of Krishna, because actually the body and the mind, especially the mind, the material mind, where suffering takes place, that mind isn't us. Buddhiya ahankaritiyami bina prakritamasta. This is the separated material energy. Bhumi rupo nalobaya kammano buddhiya, which mano means the mind. This is one of the eight separated energies of the Lord. So it isn't us, it's something, it's an energy, a subtle material energy that our consciousness is reflected through. So it's not us, so the pain, neither the pain nor the pleasures we experience are us. So through Krishna consciousness, deep, deep Krishna consciousness, deeply taking shelter of Krishna, the darkest, deepest pain actually will be wonderful. Even if we're in the most painful, difficult situation, if we can intensely experience Krishna in that situation, that experience can be the most wonderful thing. So the soul in the womb, the human soul in the womb, is praying like that. Let me stay in this difficult circumstance, because in this difficult circumstance I'm forced to remember you. I'm forced to remember you, Krishna, and in that remembrance of you, that is actually wonderful. This is the prayer of advanced souls. They don't care where they're born. Even janmani janmani share bhavatar bhakti rahit kirtai. Even if they have to come and take their birth again in the material world, they don't even, their desire isn't even to go back to Godhead. The desire is just to be Christian, fixed in Krishna consciousness, fixed in remembering Krishna. Ete or Kinkara, and everything else they see is just as a servant of that remembrance of Krishna. This is Krishna. This is an elevated consciousness. I don't care where I am, as long as I am with you, Krishna. Because Krishna is always in the spiritual world. So if I'm with Krishna by remembering him, where will I be? I will be with Krishna in the spiritual world. And what can be better than that? Nothing can be better than that. That is the natural consciousness of the soul. And that is ecstatic consciousness, Krishna consciousness. Krishna bhakti rasita bhavatomati. Krishna consciousness. In relation, the consciousness is fully in relationship with Krishna. If we can just taste that, then wherever we will be happy, more than happy. And if we're not tasting that, wherever we are, whatever we have, whoever we're with, we will be suffering. And we'll be always thinking, only if I can fulfill this desire or that desire, then I'll be happy. This desire, that desire. But what is the actual need? There is desire and then there is need. Another term for need in English, a synonym is necessity. And in Sanskrit, the word necessity, anyone know what it is? It's prayojan. So that necessity is the goal. And that necessity is that we, it is not actually some distant, far off thing, love for Krishna. It is the necessity and need of our existence. It completes the existence of the soul, and without that we are incomplete. So Srila Jiva Goswami in Bhakti Sundarbha explains that a soul prays like this, he will be liberated. If we pray like this, we will be liberated. If we don't pray, we will fill in the blank. Yes? Any other? Yeah. Suffer was the one I was thinking of. So, let's continue. Now this section that we're going to be reading today, after hearing the fascinating prayers of the child in the womb, these chapters are all very heavy chapters. This part will test us, especially the women. Read ahead, you'll see this one. There's so much criticism of the verse in the verses of association with women. But really what is meant, and Prabhupada explains it in the purport, is that because for a man, the woman is the object of enjoyment. Purusha prakriti stohe bhunte prakriti janaya. He's thinking himself male, and that enjoying spirit becomes focused on the female form. So for a male especially, association, close association with a woman, meaning that very object of enjoyment, is so dangerous. And vice versa, if a woman is looking at a man, as the object of enjoyment, it is so dangerous. Why is it dangerous? Because if we continue in that enjoying spirit, what will be the result? Further implication in this miserable, horrible, suffering cycle of birth and death. And at each stage, it's like the first chapter we heard of someone who, he was growing up, he was getting married. So whatever stage we're in of our life, we're thinking, oh, I'll be happy later on. But at each stage is misery, and finally the old person is longing for death, thinking that'll make him happy. But then death is also misery. And then rebirth. This is so horrible, being dead. I can't wait till I get reborn. And so born in this animal body, and that, and that suffering, and that suffering, and that suffering. And then finally taking a human birth. Going through these. So it's so dangerous, because the human birth is the opportunity to get out of this horrendous cycle. Painful cycle, samsara dhava, the forest fire of material existence. Samsara dhava nalarita loka. It is like a forest fire, it burns so severely. So therefore, there's going to be strong warnings against bad association and association with the opposite sex. In the mood, the spirit of your existence is meant for my enjoyment, and that enjoying spirit, very dangerous. So the text 22, evam kritamatir gave dasamasya stuvan rishi sadya chipat javat chinam pashutyai sutta maruta. Lord Kapila continued, the 10-month-old living entity has these desires even while in the womb. But while he thus extols the Lord, the wind that helps parturition, I assume that means something like birth, propels him forward with his face turned downward so that he may be born. Tena vasrita sahasra krivavak shira atura viniskramati kritstrena nirutshvaso hatasmiti. Pushed downward all of a sudden by the wind, the child comes out with great trouble. So there's such a tendency, again, at every stage we think this stage is going to be wonderful. So when we look at the innocent children, coochie coochie coo, oh, aren't they cute? But they're suffering so much, excuse me. No. But there's so much suffering from the first thing, what happens to the poor little child when he comes into the innocent little creature, when he comes into the world, he starts crying and... So this is going to be described, this stage is another stage of suffering. Because it's not compressed consciousness that is good, it's awakened, fully extended, expanded consciousness that is good. That's Krishna consciousness. So he comes out, the child comes out with great trouble, head downward, breathless, deprived of memory due to severe anger, agony. The child thus falls on the ground, smeared with stool and blood. So they wash the child because he's covered with so many horrible substances. And he plays in the sense of moves. Chestate, he moves his limbs, just like a worm germinated from the stool. He loses his superior knowledge and cries under the spell of Maya. First thing that happens, he starts moving and crying, and that initial scream of the child is so existentially powerful. And if the child doesn't scream, they whack him on the back, and as soon as he screams, they know he's all right. He's in the material world. Welcome, welcome to Australia. After coming out of the abdomen, the child is given to the care of persons who are unable to understand what he wants. Because after all, he has various needs and different pains, but he only knows one way how to express them, and that's by crying. And thus he is nursed by such persons that can't understand his needs. And you see this with a child. You try to put something in his mouth and he spits it out, and then you have to stick the spoon in his mouth or something like that. And he just tries to spit it out, and he starts crying and spit it up because he doesn't want it. So he's being nursed by people who he can't communicate with, practically speaking. He can't tell what he wants, and they can't understand. Unable to refuse what is ever given to him. He can't say no. They want to shove something in his mouth. He falls into undesirable circumstances. Laid down on a foul bed infested with sweat and germs, the poor child is incapable of scratching his body to get relief from his itching sensation. Why can't he scratch his body? Because the body is like yantra rudani maya. It's a machine, a yantra. But he doesn't He doesn't know how to work the machine yet. It's like if you got into one of those, a big crane or something like that, and they say, all you have to do is move it like this. How clumsy, you move this lever and this will happen, and you move it this way and this will happen. You couldn't do it right at first. So it may take you months and months before you learn how to do it, move the crane gracefully. So it's like that, learning to operate our body, which is just a machine. It takes so long, 5 years, up to 10 years, before one learns how to use it in a graceful way. And some people never learn to use it in a graceful way. They're always clumsy. Like that. So the poor child, he doesn't know how to use his body yet. He doesn't know how to operate this machine. So he can't even scratch himself. If he's itching, and his body is itching because it's so tender. See, half the people in the room, as soon as I said that, started scratching themselves. Like that itches immediately appear. I'm starting to... So, to get relief from this itching sense, isn't it funny though, how the mind works though? If someone says, itch, itch, see, it's starting over there. Itch. Scratch, itch, scratch. So he can't get relief from his itching sensation, to say nothing of sitting up, standing, or even moving. In his helpless condition, so he's so helpless, he can't use the machine of the body. He's so helpless. He can't eat. Basically, he can just breathe and cry. He can't eat on his own. He's completely dependent on others. In his helpless condition, gnats, mosquitoes, bugs, and other germs bite the baby, whose skin is tender, just as smaller worms bite a big worm. So these verses, Kapila Muni is taking the romance out of having a newborn baby. Just as smaller worms bite a bigger worm, the child deprived of his wisdom cries bitterly. In this way, the child passes through his childhood, so he's no longer a baby anymore. So this is what's happened. In two chapters ago, we've heard of these stages, or the last chapter, was it? Two chapters ago, we heard of the stages, and now it's happening again. Fallen into ignorance, thinking that he's the body, suffering, crying bitterly. He passes through his childhood, and in each stage of life, it has its unique suffering. Each stage of life has its unique suffering, and I'm always thinking, wait till I get to the next stage, then the suffering will be gone. So when we're 4, we want to be 7. When we're 7, we want to be 10. When we're 10, we want to be 15. When we're 15, we want to... No one's happy being what they are. So we're going to hear very simply the stress of boyhood. He attains boyhood, finally. In boyhood, this is Poganda. Also he suffers pain over desires to get things he can never achieve, and the frustrations of other people having things that you want. And thus, due to ignorance, the result of that, he becomes angry and sorry. Furious with anger. Boys are apt to create so many artificial demands for playing, and when they do not attain satisfaction, they become furious with anger, and the result is suffering. With the growth of the body, the living entity, in order to vanquish his soul, as if he was trying to put his soul, himself, in full illusion, deeper into illusion, vanquishing the actual consciousness of the soul, covering it further. In order to vanquish his soul, he increases his false prestige, and anger. Why do we like to increase our false prestige? Yeah.
This one's saying?
Yeah.
Egotism is the aesthetic that dulls the pain of stupidity.
Egoism is the anesthetic that dulls the pain of stupidity. I was thinking of it from a slightly different angle, though, but that's interesting. Because with false prestige, we can bluff people into thinking that we're wonderful, and therefore we can enjoy more. The more people that think that we're wonderful, the more we can exploit the material nature and enjoy. So we increase our false prestige. We increase our prestige in the material world, and all prestige in the material world is false prestige. People are always acting to increase their prestige. What does prestige mean?
It's the illusion that I'm significant.
It's significance, a feeling of significance. Because no one likes the feeling of insignificance. Actually, to feel insignificant is the greatest vehicle to make spiritual advancement. Trinarapi Sinitse, no. Ayi nanda tanu jikinkaram putita mam vishame bhavam buddha kripaya tava para pankaja stita duli sadvijam vachintaya. Just make me a particle of dust. This is the prayer of a fixed devotee, a particle of dust, a speck of dust at your lotus feet, O Lord. So if one has that feeling of insignificance, which is different from low self-esteem also, it gets so complicated actually. But humility doesn't mean that we're always thinking of how bad we are and how rotten we are and how we're insufficient in every way. That's not humility. Humility means that we understand that we're an insignificant servant of Krishna, and our individuality can blossom in his service, but that we have no independent existence without him. That's humility. But to complete our name, so to speak, our identity, we have to understand ourselves in relationship to Krishna. There is no other meaning to who we are. And we don't exist independently. So when we understand that, and understand how much we are needing Krishna, need his mercy, and then we're impoverished in one sense, then we can properly call him, and in that calling to him, he immediately is there. So therefore, Kirtaniya Sadahari comes when, or the continual chanting of the holy name can come when there is a continuous feeling of need of Krishna and no sense of separate prestige, separate significance. Because whatever significance or prestige we try to accumulate in the material world is false prestige, because it will be vanquished. It will be ripped from us. So he tries his whole life, the ambition stage of the living entity, is trying to make his mark in the world. So he increases his false prestige and his anger and his jealousy and his illusion and his envy, and thereby creates enmity towards similarly lusty people. So everyone, when one is trying to act in this way, everyone becomes a competitor. And everyone becomes one's enemy, because there's a fight, a struggle for prestige, to accumulate material facility, etc. Objects for enjoyment. Prabhupada's purport. In the Bhagavad Gita, 3rd chapter, 36, Arjuna inquired from Krishna about the cause of a living being's lust. Atakino priktoyam papam chariti purushanits chamapivarsyam paladipane yojita. What is it that causes this? It is said that a living entity is eternal, and as such, he is qualitatively one with the Supreme Lord. Then what is the reason he falls prey to the material and commits so many sinful activities by the influence of the material energy? In reply to this question, Lord Krishna says that it is lust which causes a living entity to glide down from his exalted position to the abominable condition of material existence. The lust circumstantially changes into anger by circumstance, because lust cannot be satisfied. Lust and greed cannot be satisfied. So then when one doesn't get what one wants, one becomes angry. And that anger, instead of directed in the right place, it's directed towards other people as if they were the cause of it. It's actually the lust and greed itself that causes the anger, the frustration. But we direct that towards other people. We project that to other people. So lust is actually the product. Lust circumstantially changes into anger. Both lust and anger stand on the platform of the mode of passion. Lust is actually the product of the mode of passion. And in the absence of satisfaction of lust, the same desire transforms into anger on the platform of ignorance. So the covering of anger is thicker. When one's angry, one always thinks he's right. And when you're getting angry, there's like a focusing of the consciousness where you become more and more convinced that you're right and he's wrong and he deserves it. And then after your anger is spent, then you return back and your consciousness expands again. So when that's ignorance, smaller consciousness, more covered consciousness. When ignorance covers the soul, it is the source of his degradation to the most abominable condition of hellish life. So we have to be careful of ignorance. To raise oneself from hellish life to the highest position of spiritual understanding is to transform this lust into love of Krishna. Sri Narottama Das Thakura, great Acharya of the Vaishnava Sampradaya, said, Kama Krishna Kamarpane, Prem Bhakti Chandrika, due to our lust, we want many things for our sense gratification. But the same lust can be transformed in a purified way so that we want everything for the satisfaction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Krishna, Krodha, Krishna, Jana, Krishna, Krishna, Dvesh. I can't remember the next one. It's Krodha, Krishna, Jana, Dvesha, or something. That when there, and we should become angry, because anger should be used by becoming angry at those who are Krishna, Dvesh, who have feeling of enmity or envious of Krishna. We should become angry at them. That is the proper use of our anger. Otherwise, it will come back on us. And the same as desire. We can't be desireless. So, the same lust can be transformed in a purified way so that we want everything for the satisfaction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Anger can also be utilized towards a person who is atheistic or is envious of the Personality of Godhead. As we have fallen into this material existence because of our lust and anger, the same two qualities can be utilized for the purpose of advancing in Krishna consciousness. And one can elevate himself again to his former pure spiritual position. Srila Rupa Goswami has therefore recommended that because in material existence we have so many objects of sense gratification, which we need for the maintenance of the body, we should use all of them without attachment for the purpose of satisfying the senses of Krishna. That is actual renunciation. So we use everything in Krishna's service without attachment. Nirbandha Krishna Sambandha Yukta Vairagya Vishite. This is actual renunciation. That is what's being recommended here. The opposite of what the materialistically entangled fellow is doing, trying to make his mark in the material world, becoming more and more greedy, lusty, angry, envious. By such ignorance, the living entity accepts the material body, which is made of the five elements, as himself. With this misunderstanding, he accepts non-permanent things as his own and increases his ignorance in the darkest region. Prabhupada's purport. The expansion of ignorance is explained in this verse. The first ignorance is to identify with one's material body, which is made of the five elements, of five elements as the self. Identify the material body as the self, first ignorance. And the second is to accept something as one's own due to a bodily connection. In this way, ignorance expands. The one Sanskrit word for wife, or the Bengali word, is stri, which literally means one who expands. It expands one's entanglement in the material world, because when you have a wife, you need your own apartment, and then you need this and so many facilities within that. So in this way, the more entangled one gets, the more one's ignorance increases. The living entity is eternal, but because of his accepting non-permanent things, misidentifying his interest, he is put into ignorance, and therefore he suffers material pains. 31. For the sake of the body, which is the source of constant trouble to him, and which follows him because he is bound by ties of ignorance and fruitive activities, he performs various actions which cause him to be subjected to repeated birth and death. It is therefore, if therefore the living entity again associates with the path of unrighteousness, influenced by sensually minded people, engaged in the pursuit of sexual enjoyment and the gratification of his palate, he again goes to hell as before. So this is a warning. This is a warning to be very careful, because whomever we associate with, there is an affectation of consciousness. We almost don't notice this. We do notice it, but we're not conscious that it's happening. If we associate with people who are miserable, we become miserable. If we associate with people who drink alcohol, we tend to go in that direction. Even if you pass somebody on the street and you talk to them for a moment, there is an affectation of our consciousness by their consciousness, and their consciousness by our consciousness. We take what they have, and they take something of what we have in our consciousness. So therefore, in Vedic times, you read in Chaitanya Charitamrita, such strict injunctions that if one sees the face of a materialistic person, one should jump into the Ganges, the holy river, with all one's clothes on immediately, or a Mayavadi's face, an impersonalist face. And therefore, sages, wanting to take their spiritual lives seriously, they go into the mountains and into the forest, because there is no asadhus there. There are no unholy people. Better to see the tigers and lions than unholy people. Because by seeing them, one's consciousness can easily become affected. This is the point. And it is real. There's always, you walk into, just like if you try the experiment, just walk, get into an elevator with 10 people in it, and 10 people all trying to, isn't it always peculiar? Everyone becomes so nervous and uptight because everyone's consciousness is there, knocking against each other's consciousness, and they're trying to keep it all in. And it's very, because, and but you can't, and everyone thinks about everyone else, and everyone tries not to think about everyone else. So, because everyone's consciousness affects each other. And then every once in a while someone will publishes a scientific experiment that if you sing to plants or something, they grow more, or things like that, because your consciousness will affect even a plant. So therefore, the point being, that Kapila Muni is explaining, is that be wary of bad association, becoming influenced by sensually minded people, because the result in suffering for so many thousands and thousands of births. So be very careful. That's what he's telling Devahuti. Prabhupada explains in his purport here, second paragraph. Generally, people are concerned with the satisfaction of the tongue and the satisfaction of the genitals. That is material life. Material life means eat, drink, be merry, and enjoy, with no concern for understanding one's spiritual identity and the process of spiritual advancement. Since materialistic people are concerned with the tongue, belly, and genitals, if anyone wants to advance in spiritual life, he must be very careful about associating with such persons. To associate with such materialistic men is to commit purposeful suicide in the human form of life. It is said, therefore, that an intelligent man should give up such undesirable association and should always mix with saintly persons. So on one hand, a satsanga tyage vaishnavachara, give up the association of the asat, materialistic people. And on the other hand, saru sanga sarva shastra hoy lava matra saru sange sarva siddhi hoy, associate with sarus. When he is in association with saintly persons, all his doubts about the spiritual expansion of life are eradicated, and he makes tangible progress on the path of spiritual understanding. It is also sometimes found that people are very much addicted to a particular type of religious faith. Hindus, Muslims, and Christians are faithful in their particular type of religion, and they go to their church, temple, or mosque. But unfortunately, they cannot give up the association of persons who are too much addicted to sex life and satisfaction of the palate. Here it is clearly said that one may officially be a very religious man, but if he associates with such persons, then he is sure to slide down to the darkest region of hell. So now Kapila Muni tried to frighten us further. He's already explained what hell is. And now he will explain to keep away from that what happens by bad association, because bad association is what infects us with the material desires. So what happens? He becomes devoid of truthfulness, cleanliness, mercy, gravity, spiritual intelligence, shyness, austerity, fame, forgiveness, control of the mind, control of the senses, fortune, and all such opportunities by associating with asadu, with materialistic sensual people. One should not associate with a coarse fool who is bereft of the knowledge of self-realization and who is no more than a dancing dog in the hands of a woman. You don't see dancing dogs literally so much in the West. Sometimes you see them in a circus or something like that. The master will do something, and the dog gets up on his hind legs and he jumps around. Sometimes they put little skirts on him and hats, and he jumps around, does this and that. Dancing dog. He's just performing for his master. So, warning us to be aware of association with a coarse fool who is bereft of knowledge of self-realization and who is no more than a dancing dog in the hands of a woman. The infatuation and bondage which accrue to a man from attachment to any other object is not as complete as that resulting from attachment to a woman or to the fellowship of men who are fond of women. Purport. Attachment to women is so contaminating that one becomes attached to the condition of material life not only by the association of women. And again, so 2 points here. One point is that if the Matajis are feeling the darts in the heart by hearing this, we should remember, as Prabhupada will explain in a purport later, that we're not all bodies, that we're eternal souls. And the second point is, as Prabhupada will make in the later, is that is that what one really has to be careful of is the spirit of enjoyment. And because the tendency for men and women to be the objects of each other's sense enjoyment, the ultimate objects of sense enjoyment, therefore association should be restricted, because, as Prabhupada explained the example of butter and fire, and who is the butter and who is the fire? The female is the fire and the male is the butter, not vice versa. Because the male in the association, the male butter in the association of female fire, melts. So therefore, because the tendency, because we're in the material world due to this enjoying spirit, because we have this strong tendency to be the enjoyer, and that tendency gets us into so much trouble. And the tendency pushed by the motive passion is so powerful. Balati even ayojata means force, as if by force engaged in activities, sinful activities, as if by force. This is the motive passion. Kama esha kota esha rajagana samudbhava. Motive passion, later leading to ignorance. So therefore, there are very heavy warnings for our own benefit to be very careful of association of those who are attached to women for the purpose of enjoying, or to the fellowship, to women directly, or to the fellowship, or men who are fond of women for the purpose of enjoyment. So we should be very careful. And again, Prabhupada will explain it later, that it works both ways, women with men and men with women. Attachment to women is so contaminating that one becomes attached to the condition of material life not only by the association of women, but by the contaminated association of persons who are too attached to them. There are many reasons for our conditional life in the material world, but the topmost of all such causes is the association of women, as will be confirmed in the following stanzas. In Kali Yuga, association with women is very strong. In every step of life, there is association with women. If a person goes to purchase something, the advertisements are full of pictures of women. The physiological attraction for women is very great, and therefore people are very slack in spiritual understanding. The Vedic civilization, being based on spiritual understanding, arranges association with women very cautiously. Out of the four social divisions, the members of the first order, namely Brahmacharya, the third order, Vanaprastha, and the fourth order, Sannyas, are strictly prohibited from female association. Only in one order, the householder, is there license to mix with women under restricted conditions. In other words, attraction for women's association is the cause of the material conditional life. And anyone interested in being freed from this condition of life must detach himself from the association of women. 36. At the sight of his own daughter, Brahma was bewildered by her charms and shamelessly ran up to her in the form of a stag when she took the form of a hind. How do you pronounce that? Hind must mean hind. Means a doe. Amongst all kinds of living entities begotten by Brahma, namely men, demigods, and animals, none but the sage Narayan is immune to the attraction of Maya in the form of woman. Just try to understand the mighty strength of my Maya in the shape of woman, who by the mere movement of her eyebrows can keep even the greatest conquerors of the world under her grip. So who is really powerful in this world? Hare Krishna. Purport. There are many instances in the history of the world of a great conqueror as being captivated by the charms of a Cleopatra. One has to study the captivating potency of women. and man's attraction for that potency. From what source was this generated? According to Vedanta Sutra, we can understand that everything is generated from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It is enunciated there, janmad yasya yataha. This means that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, or the Supreme Person, Brahman, the Absolute Truth, is the source from whom everything emanates. The captivating power of woman and man's susceptibility to such attraction must also exist in the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the spiritual world and must be represented in the transcendental pastimes of the Lord. The Lord is the Supreme Person, the Supreme Male. As a common male wants to be attracted by a female, that propensity similarly exists in the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He also wants to be attracted by the beautiful features of a woman. Now the question is, if he wants to be captivated by such womanly attraction, would he be attracted by any material woman? It is not possible. Even persons who are in the material existence can give up womanly attraction if they are attracted by the Supreme Brahman. Such was the case with Haridas Thakur. A beautiful prostitute tried to attract him in the dead of night. But since he was situated in devotional service and transcendental love of Godhead, Haridas Thakur was not captivated. Rather, he turned the prostitute into a great devotee by his transcendental association. This material attraction, therefore, certainly cannot attract the Supreme Lord. When he wants to be attracted by a woman, he has to create such a woman from his own energy. That woman is Radharani. It is explained by the Goswamis that Radharani is the manifestation of the pleasure potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When the Supreme Lord wants to derive transcendental pleasure, he has to create a woman from his internal potency. Thus, the tendency to be attracted by womanly beauty is natural because it exists in the spiritual world. In the material world, it is reflected pervertedly, and therefore, there are so many inebrieties. Instead of being attracted by material beauty, if one is accustomed to be attracted by the beauty of Radharani and Krishna, then the statement of Bhagavad Gita, Param Dvistvanavartate, holds true. When one is attracted by the transcendental beauty of Radha and Krishna, he is no longer attracted by material feminine beauty. That is the special significance of Radha Krishna worship. This is testified to by Jamuna Charja. He says, since I have become attracted by the beauty of Radha and Krishna, when there is attraction for a woman or memory of sex life with a woman, I at once spit on it and my face turns in disgust. When we are attracted by Madan Mohan and the beauty of Krishna and his consorts, then the shackles of conditioned Maya, namely the beauty of a material woman, cannot attract us. Kapila Muni continues. So after describing all this, the hellish sufferings, etc., this is the point that he wants to make. That be careful, don't become entangled in the spirit of enjoyment, because you'll suffer so much. And these are the prime way that one becomes entangled to sex life. Especially in this day and age, how difficult it is when all the propaganda, all the advertising, everything, all the dress, all the music, all the movies, all the propaganda, all the posters, all the everything is just geared towards selling this. It's very difficult. One who aspires to reach the culmination of yoga and has realized his self by rendering service unto me should never associate with an attractive woman, for such a woman is declared in the scriptures to be the gateway to hell for the advancing devotee. The woman created by the Lord is a representation of Maya. And one who associates with such Maya by accepting services must certainly know that this is the way of death, just like a blind well covered with grass. So very strong. Prabhupada's purport. This is very strong warnings for the aspiring transcendentalists. Sometimes it happens that a rejected well is covered by grass, and an unwary traveler who does not know of the existence of the well falls down into the well, and his death is assured. Similarly, association with a woman begins when one accepts service from her, because woman is especially created by the Lord to give service to man. By accepting her service, a man is entrapped. If he's not intelligent enough to know that she is the gateway to hellish life, he may indulge in her association very liberally. This is restricted for those who aspire to ascend to the transcendental platform because of the reasons. The tendency to be in the spirit of enjoyment is so strong. Even 50 years ago in Hindu society, such association was restricted. A wife could not see her husband during the daytime. Householders even had different residential quarters. The internal quarters of a residential house were for the women, and the external quarters were for the man. Acceptance of service rendered by a woman may appear very pleasing, but one should be very cautious in accepting such service, because it is clearly said that woman is the gateway to death or forgetfulness of oneself. She blocks the path of spiritual realization. A living entity who, as a result of attachment to a woman in his previous life, has been endowed with the form of a woman, foolishly looks upon Maya in the form of a man, her husband, as the bestower of wealth, progeny, house, and other material assets. From the one-third of the purport down. We should always remember, as it is stated in the Bhagavad Gita, that both the gross and subtle material bodies are dresses. They are the shirt and coat of the living entity. To be either a woman or a man only involves one's bodily dress. The soul in nature is actually the marginal energy of the Supreme Lord. Every living entity being classified as energy is supposed to be originally a woman, or one who is enjoyed. Every living entity is prakriti, or female, in relationship to Krishna. In the body of a man, there is a greater opportunity to get out of the material clutches. There is less opportunity in the body of a woman. In this verse, it is indicated that the body of a man should not be misused through forming an attachment to women and thus becoming too entangled in material enjoyment, which will result in getting the body of a woman in the next life. A woman is generally fond of household prosperity, ornaments, furniture, and dresses. She is satisfied when the husband supplies all these things sufficiently. The relationship between man and woman is very complicated, but the substance is that one who aspires to ascend to the transcendental stage of spiritual realization should be very careful in accepting the association of a woman. It's very interesting that there are many devotees nowadays who say that Prabhupada's books have to be changed because these things are so against the contemporary values of society. I'm not joking. There are many devotees who say this. That this is going to get in the way of the preaching. In the stage of Krishna consciousness, however, such restrictions of association may be slackened. Because if a man and woman's attachment is not to each other but to Krishna, then both of them are equally eligible to get out of the material entanglement and reach the abode of Krishna. Maybe I should read that one again, just to bring back to life for a moment. Huh? There we go. Tell them again. So we have to be careful. But here's the point that the attachment, man and woman's attachment, not to each other but to Krishna, then both of them are equally eligible to get out of the material entanglement and reach the abode of Krishna. As it is confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita, anyone who takes seriously to Krishna consciousness, whether in the lowest species of life or a woman or of the less intelligent classes such as the mercantile or laborer class, will go back home, back to Godhead, and reach the abode of Krishna. A man should not be attached to a woman, nor should a woman be attached to a man. For if man and woman should be attached to the service of the Lord, then there is the possibility of liberation from material entanglement from both of them. text 42. A woman, therefore, should consider her husband, her house, and her children to be the arrangement of the external energy of the Lord for her death, just as the sweet singing of the hunter is death for the deer. So the Bhagavatam is written on so many different levels. Sometimes there will be statements explaining how the glories of married life, because most people do need to be married. Otherwise, the result is worse. And then on a higher level, we'll talk how married life is very unfortunate, because it causes an entanglement for the soul. So both are true. And one needs to hear both and know both. And one needs to know one's own position and what practical position he should put himself within. Purport. In these instructions of Lord Kapila Dev, it is explained that not only is woman the gateway to hell for man, but man is also the gateway to hell for woman. It is a question of attachment. A man becomes attached to a woman because of her service, her beauty, and many other assets. And similarly, a woman becomes attached to a man for his giving her a nice place to live, ornaments, dress, and children. It is a question of attachment for one another. As long as either is attached to the other for such material enjoyment, the woman is dangerous for the man, and the man is also dangerous for the woman. But if the attachment is transferred to Krishna, both of them become Krishna conscious, and then marriage is very nice. Srila Rupa Goswami therefore recommends anashaktasya vishayan yatarham upayam jata nirbandha krishna sambandha yukta varagyusate. Man and woman should live together as householders in relationship with Krishna, only for the purpose of discharging duties in the service of Krishna. Engage the children, engage the wife, and engage the husband, all in Krishna conscious duties, and then all these bodily or material attachments will disappear. Since the via media is Krishna, the consciousness is pure, and there's no possibility of degradation at any time. Prabhupada is so blunt at times, so straight, because what can he say? Kapila Muni is saying these things because they're true, that one has to be careful of these things, otherwise one will become entangled. It's in one's own self-interest to be careful. Thank you. Any questions or comments? So are you talking about what is the proper standard? Should we, on a practical level? Well, we should be careful. That's one thing. We should understand our tendencies, that we're not free from enjoying spirit, and we should be careful. And not that we should be disrespectful in any way, or impolite, but we should be careful nonetheless. Common sense is very helpful, and knowing oneself is very helpful. Knowing one's weaknesses is helpful, and you're right that we definitely have the tendency to rationalize but also there's a tendency to become overly strict and hard and fanatical too, and that causes trouble in a different way later on. And the society suffers so much because of women being treated disrespectfully too, so much reaction because of that, not taken care of and respected properly, especially devotee women or any women. So there has to be, it's not so easy to just answer the question, what should we do? But we should be careful, respectful, understand who we are, what our weaknesses are, and understand why these things are stressed as they are. It will be different from the standard. It has to be, practically speaking. That ultimate standard, because Prabhupada said even 50 years ago in India it was a certain way, but it's not that way now in India or anywhere else. So you can't keep one standard in a world where it doesn't exist anymore in the same way. It just can't be done without... Prabhupada said that, he said that also, someone years ago wrote a letter criticizing, you know, the women in the temple room, something like that, and he said, what are you going to do? Where are you going to go in the world? You're not going to see women or something like that. So you can't, so first, the first thing is we shouldn't blame, the fault isn't women, the fault is our enjoying spirit. So how to protect oneself from that, that takes from our enjoying spirit. And what's the best situation for us so that we're in a natural position for us, so that we're neither too taut nor too loose. Because being too taut means you snap. And, you know, by being so far on this side, you end up going boing onto the other side. And if you're too loose, you can get yourself in trouble in another way. So one has to, takes practical, so you don't have to figure it out all by yourself. If you have, you know, really, if you have any questions, you can ask people you trust, is this a proper standard in this time and place and circumstances? No, it's important.
I've heard that, I mean, the standard is there, but then the reality is different. As long as you
keep it kind of
secret, then it's all right.
Keep what secret?
These hidden things which are substandard. This only which is substandard. As long as it's secret, then it's okay. Within a society.
I've never heard anyone be so bold as to say it like that. No, I don't think, obviously, it's called hypocrisy, right? No one likes hypocrisy.
So, I guess my question is how to avoid that. Because either one can attain this standard or...
One can't... See, there's the ideal standard, but we can't keep an ideal standard because the world isn't ideal. But what's the practical application of the ideal standard to time, place, and circumstance? That's what we have to work out. We shouldn't think we should be on that standard, because you can't be. Like Prabhupada, he wasn't talking to me, but I was sitting there with this one other devotee who asked them. Prabhupada said, because I allowed women to live in the temples, because of that, I was successful. Because of that, he said, I was successful. And then he said, well, how do you... Then Shrutakirti asked Prabhupada a very intelligent question. How do you know the difference between adjusting a principle according to time and place and breaking a principle? And Prabhupada thought for a while and said, that requires some intelligence. So, not that we can't ever adjust principles and make them practical application the time and place, but we have to do it with intelligence, and we should do it in a group just to make sure our intelligence doesn't cheat.
Isn't it a lot of
to
do with, I think it's a faith in the highest peace of living that you can, but not minimizing it on the basis that you have faith in Jesus.
This is the principle, and you move as close to that principle as practical. But if everyone says, well, what's practical for me is this, or someone says, well, what's practical for me is this, and then you end up with no standards. So about essential items, there should be some basic standards and etiquettes, at least in a particular community, it should be clear what they are. So it's very. I find it very... sensitive to talk about these things, but it's probably better if they're talked about than not talked about, because then everyone is, if we should get everyone on a similar thinking in it, you know, you hear what from the different points of view, and then you can get a well-rounded opinion of how to deal. But it should be as close to the standard for the purpose, because the standard is there, the ideal standard is there for a specific purpose, a very real purpose. So we should get to as close to the standard as practical. Not as possible, maybe, but as practical, all things considered. And what's practical in one place may not be so practical in another. Any other questions or comments from us? Okay, thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Sri Sri Gaura Nityananda Ki Jai.